to everyone. We're back again at the Ramble Room with Sarah and Ken and Joseph, and I'm Diane.
Yay.
I'm sure. Are you sure?
She's, I guess,
been
there's
quacker
really,
snatched.
Really no way to be absolutely certain.
It's a double gagger. Anyways.
A double gagger?
It's a doppelganger. Doppelganger? Doppelganger.
Okay, Biden.
Oh,
you
gosh.
Be quiet.
Come on, man.
You know the thing.
No, you come on.
Where they're both the same? And come on.
Where's my pudding?
Sippy cup.
You can't have guns. Okay. Different show.
It is kind of different, but I think it's really connected to everything, and that's part of the reason that I am not exactly sure how to tie all the thoughts I've been having together, because I keep having thoughts.
Oh, no.
I know.
Please pray for her.
And
how dreadful.
We put a hedge of protection around your thought. Just rein them in a little bit.
Which, it's difficult because I keep reading stuff, and it's weird how they all sort of connect to each other, although not everyone has to be reading post-apocalyptic novels and things like that.
Dystopian. This is what happens when you educate women.
I know. So we talked a few weeks ago.
Incidentally, do you know that we never had a world war until we gave women the right to vote? Did you know that?
Mm. Yeah. And Wyoming started it.
Yeah, we also hung our first woman here, didn't we?
She deserved it.
She was a cattle rustler, I think.
Cattle keep.
Yeah.
But was she good at it?
We hung her.
Well, she must have been been a problem.
All right.
She was good at hanging.
Whatever you do, do it well.
That's right.
I've seen
that's
it in
right.
a museum. Anyways.
He fainted.
A few weeks back, we were talking about 1984 and Newspeak and what that's doing, how that's really happening. And I've heard several people like Mark Stein saying, we cannot win this battle if we don't take back the language. And then one of the books that sort of seems to go with that sometimes is Brave New World. And I read that probably 25 years ago or so and was kind of going, that's dumb. Whatever. I sort of get this. And then I totally forgot what it was about, so I read it again, which will disturb your dreams if you do that. But in this book, in Brave New World by Aldous Huxley, they have things like, written back in the 1930s, he's already talking about genetically engineering people. And a special way of doing it so that you get this group from the same sperm and egg, they would do like, they could make it produce 100 identical people. And then they would have group, okay, this group is going to be the A people, and they'll be the smart ones, and we'll condition them to be the intellectuals, and then we'll have the B and the C and the D, and I think they would
just like Multiplicity?
E.
I want to be the dolphin.
No, except that they were not really Dave. Because they were all originals. They're not copies of the originals.
Okay, I was starting to worry. I'm like an F person.
But then they also do with
she put,
what?
No.
Did you editing. Shave your tongue today?
More editing.
You're bringing me a monkey.
Okay.
So I don't know what I was talking about. Okay.
People.
Then, like, the E people, they're the ones, they make them purposely not real smart so that they can be the servants to the other people. And then they do a thing called sleep conditioning. So while the children are sleeping, all the little babies in their cribs with no parents, it's just scientific, then they're conditioning them for the lives that they're going to lead. Here's how you're going to think about things. Here's what you will do. So this is back in the 30s when, you know, we really didn't have any of the technology to do that. So it probably seemed kind of weird. But now it's like, oh, we're doing that.
That's kind of what Hitler was angling toward.
Yeah.
Well, we're not mass producing people out of a single sperm and egg. But we are conditioning people in the education system to think, into group think.
Right, right.
Yeah.
And
to
if
be
you're
good
outside
little...
of the group think, then you're an E person.
Right.
You'd be a good little comrade.
Well, right. And that's one of the interesting things about reading some of these things that were written so long ago that it really was science fiction, to look at it and go, oh, they were wrong about how it happened, but not that it was going to happen. We really are doing this to ourselves and to each other. And in this one of the main things is that everybody's under strict control in order to have peace. We don't want anything stirring people up. When people believe something very strongly, they have strong reactions. when you believe in God, it makes you feel like you have to do certain things. But everybody, every once in a while, you can go hook yourself up to a machine and get a little charge of adrenaline and watch a video to get some excitement. Because we don't want you actually doing these things. So it was really eerie reading it this time because it's like, yes, we can do that to ourselves if we want to, and we're letting it be done. So just to continue the theme, and this was kind of an accident, but I had heard about the book On the Beach several years ago and hadn't ever read it. This one is about some people who are living after a big nuclear war, which happened in the Northern Hemisphere. And so the people in this book are in Australia. Everybody in the Northern Hemisphere is dead. And the Australians are just sitting there waiting for the fallout to get to them because of the wind and, you know, the way everything moves in the atmosphere. They have not been affected yet. And it's about how they behave based on knowing that they're going to die. They have a really good idea when and what they do up till then. So the epigraph of this book, this was written by Neville Shute, is from T.S. Eliot's poem called The Hollow Men. And I'm not going to read all of it, but I'll read a little bit of it and the piece that he uses as his epigraph. We are the hollow men. We are the stuffed men, leaning together, headpiece filled with straw. Alas! Our dried voices, when we whisper together, are quiet and meaningless as wind in dry grass or rat's feet over broken glass in our dry cellar. Shape without form, shadow without color, paralyzed force, gesture without motion. Those who have crossed with direct eyes to death's other kingdom remember us, if at all, not as lost, violent souls, but only as the hollow men, the stuffed men. And then there's another section, but the part that Shute used in his epigraph. In the last of meeting places, we grope together and avoid speech, gathered on this beach of the tumid river. The book is called On the Beach, just in case you forgot that part. And then the very last part is one of the most famous lines from any of his poetry. This is the way the world ends. This is the way the world ends. This is the way the world ends, not with a bang, but a whimper.
I think that was half of the, what was the old 60s? About half of their shows ended with that.
Yeah. Oh, did it?
It was okay. A common theme, even if they didn't actually say that.
Okay. I don't remember that. That was written in 1925, so that's totally possible. But it was just interesting reading this and seeing how he had people react to the fact that they knew they were going to die. And they had about a year, I think, when the book started, but they knew that in about September, everybody was, you know, it was going to get to the last place in Australia and they would all die. And they knew how they would die because it was radiation poisoning. So it was strange how he had them, they're all acting completely normal. They have pretty much everything they need except electricity, and they don't have any gasoline, so they've taken their cars and like hooked up horses to them, made them into carriages and things like that. So they haven't reverted to barbarianism like in some of the post-apocalyptic novels where there's nothing left and they're just struggling for food.
Mel Gibson couldn't make a good movie of that.
Mel Gibson can make a good movie of anything.
Now we've changed the subject.
And actually, it was interesting. I started trying to watch this movie and got really bored really fast because so much of what's happening is not action. It's the way people are thinking. But the people, they just kind of sit there and they go to work and they try to do all their normal things and they just wait.
What is the point of work?
They have to have something to do.
If I know that I'm going to die in a year,
I'm going to make Kool-Aid.
I'm going to do all kinds of crazy stuff. There's, look out.
And there's one guy who does. He has a Ferrari, I think it is, and there's a group of people who race their cars and they've been hoarding fuel so that they can do that, and they all go out and have these horrible races where lots of people die, but that's what they want to do is right. die in their cars rather than just sitting way, there. Yeah. But then some of the other ones, like the one couple, they have a baby, and the mother is always very worried about taking care of her baby and not letting anything horrible happen to her. And this couple also is planning their garden for their next year and how they're going to plant everything and take down that tree and put in this fountain and all these things. And then the main character is a submarine captain, and he kind of goes out for the government and is checking to see if there's life anywhere in the world. But he works up until the last day. But at the same time, the government has issued pills, which are probably cyanide tablets, that people will take when they feel the sickness coming so that they don't have to die, you know, in their own mess and suffering. So they're just going to live sort of like they don't see anything coming until they realize that they're sick, and then they're going to take these pills and die.
That sounds very familiar.
Does
I mean,
it?
Besides the pills,
yeah,
the citizens of not just this country, but the entire world. Because I was sitting there thinking the other day while I was by myself, I look through the world. I look at the world through a pinhole. And I'm an American citizen, and I see America. But really, there's a broader spectrum. The entire world has become complacent with their governments telling them what to do. And you go down this road, and you just keep chugging along, and things get worse and worse and worse, but you just keep going to work. You keep doing the same thing over and over and over again. And then all of a sudden, wow, we're in concentration camps. Or, you know, something even worse than concentration camps, which I can't think of anything. I mean, I would rather die, but...
Rather die than concentrate.
Yeah. which is proven on this show all the time.
But that's one of the problems, is you would rather die than be in a concentration camp. Most people wouldn't. To them, we have come to this place where death is the worst thing that could happen to you, so we'll do anything to avoid death,
right,
include give up our freedoms.
Not think about the death, that the impending doom that's coming.
Right. And that one of the things that, with the connections that I was making in my mind the last couple of weeks, was just thinking about how people have done this in the last year or so with COVID and that kind of stuff, is that it feels like our freedoms are being taken from us really quickly. All of a sudden, this stuff is happening, but it's not.
Right. It's been a slow-moving process for a very long time.
Mm-hmm. But we've been totally willing to let that happen. And the book was making me think about how we go, oh, well, you will never take that freedom away from me. Well, okay, just a little bit. As long as we can just keep doing what we always do.
Let's compromise a little bit.
Right.
Let's compromise a little bit. And that's what it's been forever. It's
done.
Compromise a little bit. Compromise. Yeah. And then all of a sudden.
Compromising.
All of a sudden you've compromised so much, and they hold all the power.
Yeah.
They're like,
and we go,
keep me
what
safe.
What happened?
I need to be safe.
Yep. And then we go, well, okay, I'll as long as you don't take this stuff from me, I'll just, you know, just give me my stuff and my comfort.
My
and
talking even, toaster.
Right.
Do not take my talking
but
toaster.
But then even then we go, oh, well, no electricity, so my talking toaster doesn't work. Okay, I'll put up with that as long as this doesn't happen.
I need my chair, my paddleball game, my dog.
I don't need my dog.
Well, socialism will take
about,
your dog.
Yeah.
You were talking about the couple that was
serve
planning their
you,
garden.
Yes.
And there are plenty of people now who go, oh, I'm going to do a backyard garden, and I love gardening, la, 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 la. And the government says, yes, you can have a garden, but you have to purchase seeds from these places.
Right. Or otherwise, you have to be certified organic.
And you can't spray these chemicals, and you can have chickens, but only 12. And you can't have a rooster, and da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, and all this stuff keeps happening. So there's this illusion that we have the freedom to do things like grow our own food, and yet it's within these sort of invisible constraints. People just don't seem to realize that you are not completely free to do what you want in your own backyard.
But if we don't notice that, it'll be okay.
Right.
There's also plenty of places where you're not even allowed to have a rain barrel.
No.
Because that water, the rain that fell out of the sky into your barrel is not yours. What?
You have a cellar door?
We do, actually. I think it would be dangerous to slide down it. So, anyway, that was my thoughts on those, is that we think that we're kind of sitting around waiting for this big nuclear war or something and thinking we'll be fine if we can keep that from happening, while we give up our little freedoms, we give up our possessions, our ability to control ourselves and what we do, And just sit there and wait for stuff to happen to us.
There's a scripture that says whoever's faithful in the little things will be faithful in the bigger things. And that's incrementalism. We all live life thinking that, well, this little tiny thing really won't matter that much. It's just a little thing. Satan doesn't come out and attack us head on with the big thing first. He knows he can't do that, which is why the Democrats do what they do, why the left does what they do. It's the same principle. We know we can't win it all at once, so we'll just push it a little bit, a little bit, a little, and it's incessant. It never stops. It's never enough.
And this is why, just making the point again, that where it looks like, wow, I can't believe they're doing this huge thing, taking away our gun rights or whatever, it's just so sudden. No, it's been happening for 150 years, and it started, well, with the Garden of Eden, but with this, with the schools being turned over to the socialists and everybody going, well, okay, okay, well, we can't make you believe certain things, and we really don't want to push our religion on people. And I can kind of see how we need to have people who would be the workers, and I get where you're coming from, and let's not make a big fuss about it so little bit, little bit, little bit, little bit, to not where we're the bad guys if we say we don't want socialism in our schools. What are you talking about? We're just doing the best for everyone.
Best according to whom?
Right.
And whenever the best for everyone is forced upon you, is it the best for everyone?
Well, no, because there's nothing that's best for everyone.
I like vanilla ice cream.
Well, that's
Sarah
a good starting
chocolate
place.
Chip cookie dough.
Which has vanilla ice
so
cream.
So do you.
I do too. Yeah.
I don't like ice cream.
See? Ken's going to starve to death when we go to this all ice cream diet.
I know that I'm pretty sure that I've made this point on the show before, and I've heard a lot of other people make the same point. It's all over Facebook, that when we were kids and we learned about the Nazis putting people onto trains and hauling them to concentration camps, you read about that and think, how could this happen? How could that many people, the masses, not rise up against this dark force and do something about it and just let it continue? And the point that keeps coming about in today's news is it didn't just happen suddenly there either. And those people allowed it to happen little by little by little because they weren't paying attention. Because if it's happening over there, it's not my problem. And we as Christians are called to stand up to evil, even if it's on the other side of the fence. There's something we're supposed to do about it.
Not only as Christians, but as Americans.
Mm-hmm. Patriots.
As patriots.
I mean, you can be an American without being a patriot, obviously.
Right.
But it does seem like there's this very small percentage of people on the left and this very small percentage of people on the right who are willing to just keep at it and willing to take those little incremental gains. It's like the game of football. It's a game of inches. But then there's all these people in the middle who are just watching the game going, well, okay, oh, all right, oh. Okay.
Mm. Let's not have anyone get hurt.
Right. I don't like this tension. I'm a non-confrontational person. Well, you'll be the first one on the train.
Somebody said there are three kinds of people. Those that make things happen. Those that stand around and watch things happen. And then there's people like Biden, that people that stand around and wonder what happened.
Going back to Nazi Germany, though, the other thing that happened there was that the people were so desperate. They were trying to come out of World War One, and inflation was unimaginable, and they were starving. All these horrible things were happening, so it was easier to tell them that, well, we'll just do this, and then you'll be okay. We'll just do this, and we'll get our power back. You'll be able to eat again. You'll be able to feed your children. So there's also some of that was not contrived necessarily by somebody sitting up there going, let's starve the Germans and see what happens. But some of it was, and we can see that now with this contrived emergency. What can we get away with while people are afraid for their lives, even if it's not something to be scared of?
But they're allowed to get away with it because when all these things happen, people look to the big man.
Mm-hmm.
How are you going to fix it? How are you going to feed it? How are you going to feed my family? How are you going to take care of this? Why are you looking to a government entity to take care of your own stuff? If you're starving, plant some corn, kill a sheep. I've never been starving, so I don't know exactly what to do.
That's the way that people have been educated,
right?
Is to rely on the government. The government is here to help you.
But that was what was so beautiful and amazing about, especially like the westward expansion in the United States, was that these people were going miles and miles and miles from anybody and anything and going, I'm going to make it on my own, or I'm going to die and nobody's going to know. But
and little did they know, California was going to turn into a socialist state.
Oh, I'm so sorry for all of you who paved the way on the Oregon Trail.
People would go for days, months, sometimes years to get to that place, and look what it turned into.
Yeah.
They didn't see it, though.
Right. Well, they couldn't possibly. And California used to be the beacon of the United States. It was this amazing place, and everybody wanted to be there. And it is proof that taking away your rights, slowly but surely, that's what you end up with. You end up with California, and then people fleeing by the millions, and then all of a sudden, nobody wants your California ass here.
I listened to two different interviews with Caitlyn Jenner.
Really?
He talks about first time he ever got to come to California and what he saw and what it stood for and all the hope and then what it has become since. I think that's a real good picture of what you're talking about. Well, one of the problems is we make it too easy for the next generation. America was full of promise. People go out, they create wealth. They create a lifestyle. They pass it on to their children. Their children don't understand or respect what it took to get there. By the time you get two or three generations down, none of it means anything anymore. And that's what's happened to the nation.
And I want to say something about the way California started. Was California was settled before the middle of the West because people got there by ship. And when they got there, they were going, hey, we're the only ones here. We can have whatever we want. And we can do whatever we want. Because nobody's going to see what we're up to. We're sort of responsible to whatever government we came from, but who's going to come check on us? And this is a problem with California, but other parts of the West that were settled by those independent people who said, I'm going to go someplace where there's nobody else around and I'm going to do whatever I want. That's, we can call that independence, but we can also call that, you know, self-interest. And when people without God are turned loose to do whatever they want, it doesn't come out well. And I think that's the basic problem with California is the people who went there and said, I can accumulate power and I can do whatever I want and the little people can't stop me, like the Mexicans who were there already and that kind of thing. And I think that happened. Wyoming is a different kind of a place too because the people who stayed here had to be a different kind of person. The other people went straight across the bottom of the state and said, we got to get through here as fast as we can. Yeah. The ones who stayed were a completely different kind of people with an independent spirit, with the idea of here, I could do whatever I want as long as I could get rid of these few little irritating people, you know, the Indians and then the cattle rustlers and then the farmers who want to put up fences and things like that.
And the sheep herders.
Right. If we could just get rid of those pesky people, we could do whatever we want. And I think that that is more the basis of California's problem because the problem of taking away their freedoms didn't come until a lot later when there were millions and millions of people there.
That's what makes me so nervous about the future of Wyoming, though, is that it seems like when we were visiting as kids, Wyoming was full of people whose parents were from Wyoming and grandparents were from Wyoming. And it's a generational thing. And now we've got people from California pouring into Colorado, and now people from Colorado are pouring into Wyoming, and in the cities,
spreading
using that
sickness
term very loosely because we don't have very big cities, the cities are being filled with people that are not from here, and they don't understand that spirit, and they are changing it from within, and we're letting them do it.
Wyoming is becoming that new Mecca. That everybody's kind of, they're freer there. They can do things, but people bring their ideas to Wyoming. And your ideas did not make this state great. This state was great before you got here. Leave your ideas in the country, in the state that you already broke.
Right. And oh, go ahead.
But the problem is, just to tie it back to where we started with the idea of the apathy, that a lot of the Wyoming citizens are watching this happen and not doing anything about it.
Right.
And we can't just like close the borders and be like, nobody can move here, because that would be ridiculous.
Are
but
you
we could.
Sure?
Well, you know, and it's still possible. I think one thing that we should be praying for is a really hard winter, because that helps a lot.
Right.
Yes.
It's a Mecca that gets to 30 below for weeks at a time, and you get 3 feet of snow. We haven't had a hard enough winter recently to really show people what it takes to live in Wyoming. But I'll tell this story, and maybe it doesn't have anything to do with it, but one thing that sparked my need to talk about this was our experience at the store last week.
Walmart,
and this is, yeah,
to be specific.
Yes, and this was just, the checker was a young kid who I'd never seen before, but I heard him yapping at the woman in front of us. But Sarah and I were together, and we sort of working together because we had two orders, mine and hers, and so there was a lot to be done. And I don't know how the conversation started, but I was kind of thinking, don't engage, don't engage, don't engage, because if you say anything to him, he's going to tell you his whole life story, which is kind of what he kept doing. But this kid just talked the whole time, and it was all about himself and how hard his job was and how smart he was to overcome it and that kind of thing. And he bagged some fruit with a glass bottle of some kind of vinaigrette.
Balsamic vinaigrette.
Yeah, so nice and
smelly.
I was
making pico.
Yeah. So I set it in the front of the cart, which I shouldn't have done. I'm not blaming him for the fact that it fell, but it just tipped out of the cart, hit the floor, and splattered everywhere. So I'm standing there in my flip-flops, and he says, oh, well, good thing we have a code. I just called for somebody to clean that up. They'll be here right away because we have a code. And I know the code. And so it was just, his brilliance was going to bring help running. You
really
know.
Not
the code
exaggerating
of the
very much.
Yeah. So there's glass all over the floor. So I'm trying to stand really still and stay out of it so this person who's running to our rescue can clean it up. And nothing happens except that he keeps checking stuff and we're trying to put things in the cart. And I look down and the stuff has run under my feet. So now I'm standing in the puddle. There's nothing to do except keep walking around it and track through it and try to avoid the glass and try to keep things moving. And we're going, oh, where's the cavalry with
the
mop?
Do you hear those horses?
Yeah.
Maybe he entered the code wrong.
I don't know.
And it was people, left, down, left, right, down, right, left, right, right, not.
We were at the checkout line that is pretty much right next to the customer service department, which is where the customer service people stay, which is where the managers stay. And usually,
yeah, the manager's over there going, hey, there's some balsamic vinegar on
exactly,
the counter.
Exactly.
They are supposed to be walking back and forth and making sure that the checkers are okay, that the customers have what they need. That's what they used to do. And now the excuse is, well, we're so shorthanded. We're so
shorthanded. Oh, how many times did he say that? Yeah.
Oh, it's just, I mean, see, this is a perfect example of just how shorthanded we are. That's why you're standing there in a puddle of balsamic vinaigrette that everyone is smelling.
Well, Ken's missing part of his hand. You don't hear him complain about being shorthanded.
Thanks for getting that in there.
Yeah, no problem.
But there were people walking past.
Yes.
Other employees walking by there and going, oh, what's that smell? And seeing the mess, and gosh, I hope someone's coming to clean that up soon, but it's not going to be me. Anyway,
because I'm not the guy with the mop.
Right.
Clearly.
So I bet it was 10 minutes before the guy with the mop got there. And then he was just kind of like, oh, and he says to me, are you the one who's responsible for this or something like that? And I said, well, if you need to blame someone, yeah, it fell after I set it down, but I wouldn't say that I did this and made it happen to you.
He was only a type E person. Why were you even messing with him?
Well, yes, he certainly wasn't type A, because as soon as he got that mop and started swooshing around the balsamic vinaigrette, some of the glass got stuck in his mop, so he flicked it under the display thing. And I, as a professional, was cringing and trying not to cry.
So that part of the point is, they're so shorthanded. Why? Because nobody actually needs to work. Because the government is taking care of them. I don't know why that kid had a job. He probably didn't actually need it. He didn't work it like he needed it. And no one does. But then the guy who came with the mop was like, la, 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 let's just get this cleaned up. I'm really sorry you made this mess for me. He was nice about it. But, you know, I said, when you wring that mop out, if you ever get around to it, would you set it down and let me step on it so I can, because my feet were sticky. on the top and the bottom, but at least I was trying not to slip in anything. And she sees him flick glass wherever, and he's picking up the big chunks and stuff like that. But it was just, the whole thing was just pathetic. Okay, here's a total uneducated, ignorant idiot checking our stuff out and complaining about trying to make it seem like his job is so hard because, oh gosh, I don't know on this piece of stuff how to find the UPC code so that it will beep.
You would think that the manufacturers were all going to print them in the same way so that everything was on the bottom.
And I had to turn it over and find it. So the fact that I hesitated here is not my fault. It's the fault of whoever made this thing. And then the guy, when he finally gets there, is this your fault? Yeah. Okay, yes. It's my fault. And he was still working on it when we left.
But it's your fault you filled out that application.
Right, because he could just file for unemployment, and the government would pay him not to
work. At least he is working. Not very well.
Sort of, yeah.
However, here's my issue with this generation. And I know that every generation has looked at the upcoming generation and thought, oh my gosh, these people are worthless. But through a series of life events, I had to re-enter the workforce after 8 years of being at home with my kids. And I was always a hard worker, and I always cared very, very much about whatever I did. But it was very interesting to me to go back to work into the restaurant industry 8 years later and see pretty much a whole new crop of kids. And there were a few of us who had our own children who were there because we needed that job. And so not only were we working hard because we needed to keep that job, we were working hard because we cared. Because we cared if the customers were getting what they wanted. We cared if we were going to get chewed out by somebody because something didn't go well. We cared about making it a good experience for the customers. Then you have all of these 18, 19, 20-some-year-old, whatever, not even old enough to drink, but old enough to vote. That's fun. Who absolutely did not care. I'm going to do the base minimum, only what I have to do to not get yelled at from my boss. I don't care if this customer's upset. I don't care if it's a good experience. I just want to get out of here as soon as possible. They weren't providing for anybody, so they didn't care about making the max amount of money and squeezing every last tip out of every customer. But they also just didn't care about anybody else. And that was so frustrating to work with people like that. And it's an age-old problem in the restaurant industry where, you know, the morning shift doesn't get everything done, so the evening shift punishes them by not doing it. And then everybody's right. Yelling at each other. You know what? If everybody actually cared about what they were doing just because that's the common decency human thing to do, everything would be different. But people don't care.
And that was before COVID.
Right.
Now, not only have they not been trained to care by their education and their parents and that kind of thing, but there's no reason to care. When the restaurant opened back up, did they get enough people to run it?
No, they're still not at full capacity, and it's not because they're not allowed. It's because they don't have enough staff.
Right.
But I would like to point out, however, that there are at least four of us who were working there. The restaurant got shut down. We lost our jobs, and at least four of us went out and started our own companies.
Yeah.
Weird.
The American dream right there, baby.
Yeah.
Or
so
there's not very many dreams because you don't sleep when you own your own business.
But while I was standing there watching this happen, that's the kinds of thought I have. This is the way the world ends. Not with a bang, but a whimper.